Welcome to the Michael Paris Podcast.
Dr. Ryan Ninestein, welcome to the show. For all those who don't know, Dr. Ryan Ninestein is a board-certified plastic surgeon in New York City and the owner of Ninestein Plastic Surgery. He's often referred to as the surgeon's surgeon, as many surgeons choose him as their trusted doctor. As the author of Safety Guidelines and Masterclass Instructor, he stresses the importance of hyper-specialization and patient care above all else. He's also an entrepreneur and a frequent speaker on how to harness personal and team potential in the modern world. Though his proudest achievement is the loving family he has with his celebrity fitness instructor and wife, Lauren Ninestein. Doctor, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I love these opportunities to talk to bright, interesting, worldly people about fun topics.
Well, tell me, Doctor, how do you offer value to those around you, and how has that value helped industry leaders, entrepreneurs, or just, you know, regular such individuals?
Well, I think the most important thing we do in our practice is add significant value to our patients' lives. And we put our patients first and our staff second. I really believe it's important that we make significant differences in people's lives through our patients and our employees. And by doing that, that provides the purpose that, you know, keeps the engine humming here. And the way I have always done that, and I think it was Stephen Covey in his 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, seek first to understand, then to be understood. So, you know, God gave us, you know, 2 ears and 1 mouth. So we should listen more than we speak. So it's incredibly important for not just our patients, but our team members, that we listen and help them understand what they truly want, who they truly are, and what we can do, what I can do as an employer and what I can do as a surgeon to help them realize their goals. I really believe not a lot of people are able to visualize and vocalize who they are and who they want to be. And when someone can help them do that and actually be the impetus of change to bring them there, you can add a lot of value to the world.
Right. I feel like deep down as a plastic surgeon, that's really what you do. It's you're a doctor that helps people with their self-esteem, with their self-identity, you know, help people understand who they are better. And, you know, more than just, you know, the actual surgery, I feel like deep down, and I feel that's the culture based on what I've read up about you online. I feel like that's the type of culture you try to inculcate in your family, in your office, and in your practice. I've watched some of your videos, and it looks like there's an amazing energy that goes on, and it feels like it's all connected.
Helping people creates a lot of positive energy, okay? And when that is contagious, anything, as we all know, can be contagious, but the culture of putting patients first, creating real change that's of value, is something that creates positivity on anyone who's involved in that process.
Amazing. And in a broader sense, what does success mean to you?
I mean, success to me is really, you know, I think about this question all the time. And I think a lot of people think success is having like true belief in themselves, or they think they can, you know, or they have some monetary goal that's success. But to me personally, when I think of success and I think about the feeling that I get when I feel successful, it's when I really feel that I am limitless in my abilities to make change. And I really believe that limitless is whether or not it's creating new surgical techniques or creating new programs for our employees to better themselves personally and professionally, or be able to balance all this while still being a great father. If you can get to a point where I think you personally believe you have no limits, that to me is success.
One of the questions that I've been waiting to ask you, and it sounds like you might have very unique insight on this, is how do you balance your professional life and your work life? And I will say this, when you head down the entrepreneurial path, it's a pretty rocky run, and you're constantly optimizing for efficiency. You're cutting corners in every other aspect of your life so you can get a footing in whatever environment you're competing in. And it's very easy to get caught down that rabbit hole and look back and realize that you've cut everything out of your personal life or your professional life. And it's not, the worst part is that people like myself don't even see that as a problem. You enjoy what you do so much that you don't realize that you've kind of sacrificed a big part of your personal life. Someone like yourself who does have success in the professional world, how do you create that perfect balance? Because it seems like you're a really good husband and a really good father. At the same time, you're extremely successful. And there must be a secret here.
So I get asked this question a lot from residents, fellows, other entrepreneurs, surgeons about balance. Let me tell you a little quote from my favorite Russian philosopher, Dostoevsky. You should be worthy of your suffering. Okay. That was his greatest fear of life, that he would not be worthy of his suffering. So let me tell you about balance. In the arc of your life, balance will mean different things at different times. At this point in my life, people would say I have no balance. You know, I'm happy to work 16 to 18 hours a day. But honestly, for me, that's the appropriate balance at this point of my life. This is how I build the foundation of my practice, which is the foundation of all the team members' lives. This provides for them, their families. This provides for my family and allows me to contribute a lot to the world through what I can do to patients. Okay. That's at this point in my life. Am I always stepping away from meals to call a patient? Do I miss birthday parties? 100%. The reason I truly have balance is because me and my wife are true partners and we have a true belief and understanding of each other. So yeah, listen, I don't really do a lot of social things anymore. And I'm okay with that. I don't feel like I'm missing out. I have true friends. We communicate. It might be more texting or calling than, you know, physically hanging out. I'm okay with that because I'm honest and transparent with them. Listen, I'm in it right now and I want to be in it. Okay. If you need me, call me. I'll be there. But like, if you don't need me, just send me your favorite meme of the day and I'll be happy. Okay. So balance changes in the arc of your life. When I was in residency, again, it was like 7 years of my life, I had no social life. After residency, when I was working for someone else and I had more free time before I went out on my own, I had a very busy social life. And so balance sways.
Right.
You have to calibrate balance to your priorities, your desire, and your inner fire. Okay. So when I put all those into my calculation, you know, people think I have no balance. I think I'm perfectly balanced because my energy output is perfectly matched to my desire.
Well said. And you kind of got me thinking when you said that, you know, balance, your definition of balance is not absolute. It's dependent on whatever place you are in your current lifestyle. And that really got me thinking because, you know, perhaps balance to me would be for me to stop for a moment and say, what are all the things that are considered valuable in my life? Parents, girlfriend, family, my this, my that. And as long as I don't pursue a specific endeavor in my life, so much so that it compromises on everything else, I think that's where I can start finding my balance. And it's okay, like you said, to sometimes pull 18 hours a day of work. And it's even okay sometimes to have a slight imbalance to completely capitalize on a specific moment, on a specific aspect of your life, as long as it's not truly detrimental to the others. And that can change over time because, you know, at some point you can have, you know, your wife really understands what you're doing and she understands that you have certain milestones you want to reach. And then you could put super focus on your work as long as it doesn't compromise the relationship you have with your wife and you guys are operating on the same thing and all that good stuff.
That requires a lot of, you know, radical transparency.
Right.
And some real meaningful discussion.
Thank you. That was actually very useful. I appreciate that. Now,
by the way, I just want to say this about the balance thing. You know, they didn't put a man on the moon working 9 to 5. Okay.
Correct.
If you want to do something amazing and you want to do something impactful and you want it to touch a lot of people and you're passionate about it, you're going to work a lot. Okay. And my balance, when I think internally, I get enough sleep. I eat well. I read something interesting every day. I exercise every day. And then I crush it. That's balance. Okay. I don't need to watch, you know, 10 hours of football on Sunday and 4 hours of football on Monday. That's 14 hours that I can, you know, move my needle forward.
Correct. And what would you tell Albert Einstein? Because he gave up his personal life for his future. He was a really smart guy with extremely impactful contributions to humanity, but he wasn't the greatest dad or father. He wasn't the greatest husband or father. And, you know, I feel like he really went over the edge on that because I did read up on his life and I got the impression we're like, you got to do one or the other.
Yeah. So I've met entrepreneurs or surgeons who said, you know, I don't want to get married. I don't want to have kids because I just want to focus on my career. My response to all that is the best thing I've ever done as a surgeon was become a husband and become a father. Okay. Right. So that's a simple answer. There's the love from your significant other and your children outcompetes anything you could do on your own.
Right. It's not a zero-sum game. You're not sacrificing one for the other. In fact, giving time over to something else gives you a more holistic sense of identity, makes you more motivated to pursue, you know, let's just say, you know, you're doing surgery, it helps you pursue your direction as a surgeon. And I actually agree with that. I think that's very well said. You seem to be a man of wisdom with a lot of wise words and quotes. Tell us about your favorite book, why you think it's your favorite book. Let's hear it. Or, you know, make it your top few books.
Okay. Well, listen, everywhere you go in my office, you're going to find books. And if you look at my phone, there's audio tapes everywhere. I really believe, you know, not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers. There's no reason you need to walk through the world without a flashlight. And everything you think you're going through in your life for 4,000 years, many stronger, more intelligent, crazier people have gone through the same things and their stories are out there and all those lessons apply today. I'm going to say a book that I think it's important to have books that you know, I try to read 1,000 books a year or as many as I can. Oh. But there's always one, two, or three that are like, I'll just go back to all the time, right. You know, almost like a Bible. And one of them is The Obstacle is the Way from Ryan Holiday.
It's you're in a different place in your life. And now when you reread that book, you can read a different perspective.
You can read a book 12 different times and it's 12 That's different crazy. Books depending on the time of your life. And it's good love to have that. Those books that you need. And I like Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday, who, you know, I know Ryan writes about Stoic philosophy, but spins it with modern cultural relevance, which allows, you know, an easily digestible way. And, you know, The Obstacle in the Way, you know, is based on the Greek philosophy of amor fati, which is basically love everything, like anything that happens to you, good, bad, indifferent. You know, there's nothing, you can't control the outside world. So, you know, don't act like a victim. Everything that, you know, don't get too high, don't get too low. When something bad happens, it's an opportunity to learn, figure out how to get through that situation, put that in your tool chest and like move on, you know, because like, I think it was Napoleon who said, behind every mountain is just another mountain. Okay. So you better get used to climbing.
Well said. And I also love that, you know, I guess what you're saying is you don't need to reinvent the wheel and you should always be standing on the shoulders of others.
I mean, listen, good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, I impress upon someone to read Napoleon or to read Nietzsche or Don Quixote and tell me they're not moved. Like, it is impossible. I mean, these are bold people who are facing, you know, whether or not similar context problems that you're facing day to day. And it's unbelievable. It gives you so much insight into the modern world.
Well said. I have a question for you, doctor.
Get me.
So you run a facility, you've got various highly technical people, very smart people, people who are very technical, people who are very emotional, deal with the customer service, people who are internal.
Yeah.
You must have conflict from time to time because people operate under very underlying different philosophies. How do you deal with conflict within your within your company, within your facility? Pretty much how do you resolve issues?
So conflict resolution is definitely a skill that you develop over time. And really people have been giving strategy for, 100 years. You can go back to, Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People, written in the 20s. Number one is you get in front of someone. You don't want to be doing this on text or email. So you're either in person or on the phone, but you want to get into a place. You want to preemptive say, hey, and you want to acknowledge that there's a conflict and say, I'd like to really talk about it. This is very important to me. And then number one, you want to hear the person out, like let the air out of the balloon, sympathize and empathize, and then really step back and realize everyone sees the world through a different lens. Okay. Like right. You think the sky is blue. They think the sky is red. And like, that's the way they think. So stop, you can't force someone to take your thoughts. So if you want to resolve conflict, you really need to try to see things through their lens.
Right.
And then when you need to say, you literally need to say these words. I would like to come to a conclusion on this. I would like it to be collaborative, not adversarial. Are you able to, I truly care about you. Are we able to work? I always say, are we able to work collaboratively? Because, and I don't think anyone's ever said no, because people want conflict resolution. And whether or not that's, changing someone's work schedule or patients who are unhappy that may need more surgery or a refund or whatever it is, are we able to work together collaboratively? I want to, I care. I've never heard anyone say no. If someone says, no, I want to be adversarial, you're like, okay, well, this stops now, right? Like call me when you're ready to collaborate. But if you sympathize, you empathize, you acknowledge, you tell them you are doing everything you can to look through their lens and see how they could see that. And then you make it clear you want to come to a resolution, but you must, both sides must accept it's going to be collaborative and not adversarial.
Well said. Now, again, I looked at you online. You seem to have a really good work environment, and that appealed to me. I want to know, when you're hiring people to come join your facility, what are the things you look for that's most important?
Okay, so it's very simple, but this did not happen, okay? There's nothing worse in a company than someone who has negative culture, right? Negative culture spreads like wildfire. It is seductive and is a company killer. And you got to get rid of those people immediately. And you got to face all the difficulties that's going to go. It's better to fall on your sword, get rid of them, and realize you got to accept that you made the mistake on hiring them. Okay. They are who they are. You didn't catch that they are an incredibly toxic person. That's on you though, not on them. That's who they are. So we basically, I have four core principles that like you have to be all in on. So when people come work here, number one, they have to professional expertise. So if you want to be a nurse with us, number one, like you have to be a nurse. You have to be, certified, well-trained, and be all in. This isn't a job, it's a career. Okay, that's number one. Number two, you have to be someone who's willing to always learn, okay? There is no end point in medicine and in life. You have to be committing to personal and professional growth. We have nurses who are taking photography lessons to get better for our social media. We have nurses taking infection control courses. We have nurses taking leadership courses, anything, nutrition courses. Everyone has to continue to grow because things in motion stay in motion. I will not accept like the lack of inertia. And then three, you have
complacency is the death of you. That's the
listen. One thing I say in the office all the time is like, we have to make ourselves obsolete, otherwise, someone else will. So after we have the professional expertise, willingness to learn, you have to be willing to generously share knowledge. Okay. If you are the kind of person who likes to work in a silo, you can't work here. It doesn't work. If you learn something, share it, because why not get an army of people behind it? And then the fourth and the hardest thing, and a lot of people can't handle this, you have to take feedback. Okay. You have to be willing to take feedback. And I do that myself. And everyone, you want to take the hierarchical structure of feedback. It is not like I sit up here and tell everyone what I think about them. Okay. From the person who, you know, cleans the bathrooms at night to everyone, there's feedback, horizontal, vertical, and diagonal. Okay. Yeah. And it's formal and informal. If you create an environment where people give constructive feedback, and there are ways to talk about things without, you know, being negative. And because if you don't have checks and balances, it just doesn't work. But when we make people and we push them, it's not easy to work for me or with me. Like,
right. It's not supposed to either.
It's not supposed to be. People either love it and it's the best thing that's ever happened to them in their life, or it doesn't work out and they want to go back, yep, you know, to some other workplace.
That's usually how it is with precise visions. You have to really have a team of all stars. You're operating at the peak of efficiency. Anyone who doesn't really calibrate with the culture of the company or the expertise of the company becomes a huge dead weight.
We don't allow, one of the things we always do, sevens kill companies, right? Fours you get rid of, they're obvious. The sevens, you know, they kind of hide on the radar. But if you have a company full of sevens, you're like nobody, it's an awful place. You have to get rid of sevens. So that's why you have to challenge people. And when you get pushed back on growth, that means they're a seven and they got to go.
Yeah, I really like your answer because, you know, sometimes people look great on paper. The hardest thing about hiring are those foundational elements that you can't fix on the job, you can't get with experience, and you don't see on paper. Oh. Those are the ones that sneak in 2-3 weeks in, you realize it's an issue, and then you already invested all this time.
Nobody's perfect, but when you tell them these are the clear metrics, like, and we're going to hold you to it, like, it'll scare you or energize you.
Right. No doubt in my mind, Doctor, that you are an effective leader. And the values that you bring down to the people who are working for you must be amazing. And I'm sure that you know how to hold people accountable. You know how to help people maximize their potential, understand their weaknesses. My question to you is, who does that for you? How do you identify your weaknesses? How do you improve on your own weaknesses every day?
So one of the most important things I've learned over the last few years is important to have a mentor. Okay. So I have a mentor, David Edelman. And here's the real thing about finding mentors. This is the key that I've really learned and why I'm so grateful to have David as my mentor. There's a difference between having a smart mentor and a wise mentor. A smart mentor is someone who's read a lot of books and can tell you a lot of things. A wise mentor is someone who's read all the books, but he's done it all. Or she's done, like, they've read the books and they've done it, okay? And they have no skin in the game, except that they care about you and your family, but no financial interest. They will be honest and they will call you out on your nonsense and your BS. And they will just give you raw, honest feedback. Those relationships are hard to find. And when you do find them, you need to cultivate them. And if you can't find one, get a paid mentor. You can pay for a life coach, pay for a business coach, and get the best one you can and let them rip your life apart.
Very interesting. Very, very interesting. Yes. You should never get comfortable with where you are. You always want to feel like you're the smallest person in the room and you have so much climbing to do. I very much agree with that. One more question, Doctor. What is your 5-year plan?
So, you know, my 5-year plan is to continue the growth. Like, and I don't have, you know, if someone asked me today, what's the ultimate, you know, plan, I'd probably say, you know, space exploration. But my goal is not... You know, I don't have an aspirational goal to keep scaling my business. This is not like medicine is not like most businesses. Okay. When you get better in medicine, it doesn't mean you get bigger. It's you get better at treating patients. Right. It's a key difference. And it's not so, and that's something that a lot of people, entrepreneurial people in the medical field don't get. You know, I know that there's a lot of interest in roll-ups, right? It's hard. You want the goal to be better patient care. And if you are, your long-term plan is better patient care and not profit, I think you're making a more meaningful difference. And that's my five-year plan, is to continue to double down on that. Because at the end of the day, if you take care of patients, the profit takes care of itself.
That's a very, very good answer. And it's contrary to how I would have thought you would have answered it.
I know. Everyone thinks I'm going to say I want 6 offices, 20 doctors, right, all over the place.
And then absolutely, you become bureaucratic. You become disconnected. You're not necessarily having that personal relationship.
If you can't touch the end, if you can't touch at the end of the empire, you lose it. Ask Alexander the Great.
On those wise words, I want to thank you for your time, Dr. 19.
And thank you.
I'm sure my audience will appreciate the wisdom you've given them.
I hope so.
Keep up the great work.
Yes.
Have a wonderful day.
Appreciate it.